Welcome to Advertising Week Europe 2024 in audio, powered by The Barbershop. In this podcast, we'll bring you the latest insights and trends from industry leaders in advertising and marketing. Join us as we dive into discussions that shape the future of our industry.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to today. My name is Mimi Turner. I work at LinkedIn. I head a think tank that we have on marketing strategy and effectiveness, the B2B Institute. And I'm here with my phenomenal friend, Paul Stringer.
Hi, everyone. Paul Stringer. I'm a managing editor for Research and Insights at WARC.
So at the B2B Institute at LinkedIn, we have a really profound belief about B2B and the category and the growth and the opportunity. And I think our fundamental belief is really that brand is the biggest untapped growth driver for B2B. So it's very exciting for us to work with WARC, which is not the easiest thing to say, by the way. It's not the easiest thing to say. It's been very exciting for us to work with WARC on a couple of different research projects.
Yeah, at WARC, we've published quite a lot of research, actually, focused on B2B, but really showing that brand is quite underdeveloped in B2B compared to B2C. So we're really excited to be combining forces with the LinkedIn B2B Institute on this particular project.
That's right. And actually, this is the third project that Paul's team and I've worked with. But this is actually the first time that Paul and I have ever presented on stage. I think some people here might have seen some of the presentations that I've done with David Tiltman, who is also at a walk. But David is like incredibly tall. So when we come on, we have a kind of really funny joke. Which I think it's funny anyway. About the long and the short of it, because that's kind of a niche joke, right? You cannot do the long and the short of it everywhere. But we can't really do that joke today. So I'm slightly sad, but we're going to think of some other jokes. Some of the funniest things in B2B you're going to hear in the next 30 minutes. Paul is very modest. So Paul's actually Paul Stringer, PhD. He's Dr. Paul. Dr. Paul is in the house. So if anybody has any sort of like urological problems and problems around arthritis, Paul is not that kind of doctor. So don't come with your inquiries about medical stuff. But if you want to have a really deep and in-depth understanding of marketing strategy, of brand, and how to make those ideas come to life, Paul is absolutely your guy. I've worked with him and his team three times now, and I really feel that we have pushed further the thinking that we as an industry have had about B2B, which is an incredibly nascent growth opportunity.
Yeah, so today we want to talk to you about some findings from a new white paper that we're working on with LinkedIn. Why are you laughing at me? It's not been released yet, but we're really excited to preview some of the findings at Advertising Week because we believe there's a huge opportunity in advertising in B2B when we focus on what we call the customer promise.
Yes. Sorry, Paul, I totally made you laugh then, or I laughed anyway. This is the second part of the piece of work that we did last year, which we worked with. This is my colleague Jan Schwartz. We worked with Roger Martin. If anybody has read Playing to Win or ever bought a product that was made by Procter & Gamble, Roger Martin did the strategy and work for them. We announced this piece of work in Cannes last year. And we were incredibly happy this year at the beginning that it was published in Harvard Business Review, because once you get your data through Harvard Business Review's ingestion process, you feel pretty good about yourself. But we had one kind of major problem, which was that with the data set, we looked at more than 2,000 advertising campaigns. We didn't have as big a segment of B2B campaigns as we really needed to pull out some results. And part of the reason was when we looked at that data set at the beginning of 2023, there weren't enough. There were about 435 B2B award entry campaigns that WARC had globally. But I think as an indicator of how our industry is growing, that number has more than doubled, I think in part because Cannes Lions launched a B2B Lion, there's a WARC effectiveness B2B Lion. So now we've actually had the data set that we were looking for. Like Bono still didn't find what he's looking for, but we actually found what we're looking for. And that's what we're really excited about. And B2B is a category that is undeveloped and has a huge opportunity.
So at WARC, we have this metric that we call creative commitment, which is basically a way of analyzing campaigns. And we score campaigns against how long they've run, level of investment they've received, and the number of media channels they've used. The idea being that if you invest more, run your campaign for longer and are spread across more channels, your creative commitment is higher, right? But what we found over the last 10 years in B2B is creative commitment has been in decline, which has some quite negative consequences for effectiveness and creativity.
Yes, we want to turn that around.
Exactly. And we know, right, B2B marketing, we tend to live in kind of like a product first world in B2B marketing. B2B marketing is very much driven by a product first rather than a brand first mindset.
Just to give you an example, so I was, oh, this is quite a creaky stick.
Yeah, I had this problem.
The stand in one place. Okay. So this is the marketing tech landscape in 2010. So in 2010, there are like 150 vendors in this space. By 2023, there are 11,000 vendors. Like all of these vendors have got to have some way of building a brand. They've got to make a promise of value to the people who matter. They've got to have some sort of ability to differentiate, and they've got to be able to stand out. That's not that easy. It's not that easy to build the brand.
So they need to build a brand, but in B2B, brand has a brand problem, if that makes sense. Basically, the idea of brand is not as compelling in B2B as it is B2C because of this domination of a kind of a product-first mindset.
Yes, I think people wouldn't admit it, but a lot of people in B2B businesses, a lot of the marketers that we talk to, the CFO does not understand the language of brand, and partly that's on a CFO, but also partly some brand metrics they're like kind of like the language of a horoscope. You know, awareness is rising in Mercury, and it's like, okay, thank you very much, but you can't have any more money until you can express it to me in terms of growth. Brand means many things, and we landed on the idea of trying to express something without using the word brand because it means too many different things. And we alighted on this idea of a customer promise. A customer promise distills the idea of brand. It captures the elements of the four P's, but it is something that a 10-year-old can explain to another 10-year-old. What is the promise that you make? And this idea allows the concept, the central concept of marketing, to travel through a whole organization, travel through the C-suite, travel through all the silos in a business, travel through to all the way to the customer. So we wanted to test if our hypothesis was correct. So Paul's going to tell you a little bit about the experiment that we set up. But before I do that, I just want to take you through what we mean by a customer promise so that you can see the difference between the two buckets that we were testing. So this is one of the campaigns that was entered for an award. It's become my number one, my mostest favorite, right at the top of the hit parade of B2B ad campaigns. This is an ad for Procell. Procell make batteries. Batteries are something that absolutely nobody really cares about. Nobody cares about batteries. They did an incredible case study. They said, you know, we actually analyzed that our status was so low that nobody cared about us. They make premium batteries, but the problem for them is that the people who buy batteries for organizations in procurement, they literally just buy them from wherever it is you buy your batteries, and they cost the least amount of money. These guys are premium players. Their batteries are better. So their whole strategy was to say, it's not, you know, we can't persuade people that a better battery is what they're looking for. What we need to persuade procurement people is that you waste a lot of time with crappy batteries. So here's their campaign. I think this is one of the, this is a, like a kind of Federico Fellini level creative for B2B. Meet your battery changer. If you have better batteries, you're going to see less of him. And their actual promise is, I think you can just about see it, replace less, save more. That's a great promise. Everybody understands it, especially the procurement people to whom it's targeted. This one, I think many more people will have seen, although now I want you to all remember ProCell. But this is the Workday ad. So in this was a Super Bowl ad. So obviously in the US, it's a huge thing. But be a finance and HR rock star is a promise that tells the person, the customer, what's going to happen for them when they use the product. So I like to make things as simple as possible because life is really complicated and we all have many things to remember. Also, I used to be the marketing director for Lad Bible, and I learned then you've got about 11 seconds and that's all you've got of people's attention. So I tried to make this kind of quite complicated model into something simple. Customer promise campaigns are quite a lot like Janet Jackson. Janet Jackson says, what have you done for me lately? What have you done for me lately? What are you going to do? That's what customers want to know. Now, Paul is going to tell us a little bit about campaigns that didn't make a promise to the customer, which were a very large part of our data set.
Yeah, so the first example of a campaign that didn't make a promise here was from this Finnish security company called Abloy. And they developed this campaign, which is about protecting cultural heritage sites. And it was framed under this idea of securing greatness, right? So you can't really see the executions that well on the right, but what they're saying is over 300,000 treasures secured, the world's largest casino market secured, exabytes of data secured. You get the picture. Now, the reason why this isn't making a promise, right, is this is mainly the company kind of talking about itself to itself about what it's achieved. And there's nothing inherently wrong with that, but it's not customer oriented. And one of the challenges with statements like this is they're not very ownable. They're difficult to associate with a particular brand.
I think you're being very polite about this.
Really?
Securing greatness is just not an ownable statement. You can't own it. And also, this dynamic that we saw where brands are talking, it's like going on a date with someone and all they do is they talk about themselves. And you're like, okay, where's the bit where we talk about my dreams, hopes and aspirations? And if that bit is not missing, then there's rarely a second date, I would contend.
That's a good point.
It's been a very, very, very long time since
I don't know how I'm trying to think about now how I can make a sort of dating analogy out of this one, but
I think this is
I'll
tricky.
Leave that one up.
I think it's tricky. Yeah. Even I would not with live ammo try to make a joke about the Eaton desk toy decision.
Okay, so this one is from a company called Eaton. They're kind of like an IT company. And what we saw in the data set that we looked at of B2B cases is there's a lot of these kind of social buzz PR stunt type campaigns. So they basically created this mock presidential race to mimic some of the difficult decisions that IT decision makers have to make inside businesses. The point of this is it's not really making any kind of clear promise, right? And what we notice when we look at these types of campaigns is they tend to be quite good at shifting short-term metrics, but what they're not doing is delivering anything against the brand. They're not really helping drive long-term brand building growth. They're very much focused on generating this short spike of interest, which then dissipates.
So we tried to think of a model for these other kinds of campaigns, the campaigns that use their space to talk about themselves. So I think I don't know whether I'm dating myself, but everybody must know that Carly Simon song, You're So Vain, You Think This Song Is About You. Well, these campaigns thought the ad was about them. And I think it's worth saying that when, like in 2023, when we started this process, we had two groups of researchers. They're going through 2,000 plus campaigns. We have invented the taxonomy of customer promise and not customer promise. So it has to be a manual process. Literally, we split the world in these two different ways and said we want to compare one against the other. We didn't know what was going to happen. We had a hunch based on some of our previous experiences that we wanted to test that. But we really didn't know. And we're not saying that it's wrong to have a campaign that's about you. What we're saying is that when we looked at large data sets with complex metadata, with multiple layers of iteration and inference that were possible, and when Paul and his team put all of that into their kind of magical statistical machine, we were able to compare at scale the performance of one group versus another. And that's the experiment that we set out to do with a large group of B2C campaigns and B2B campaigns. And what we've now done is to isolate the B2B campaigns and run that experiment again.
Yeah, so this is the research sample that we use for this particular study. So we looked at 703 B2B cases in total. Now, within that set, we identified that about 18% of the sample contained campaigns with a promise. So 18% Janet Jackson, 82% Carly Simon, non-promise cases.
82% of campaigns were doing something other than communicating the value that that product or service or vendor provided to the customer. They thought something else was going to drive more sales.
So key findings from this research study. I mean, first and foremost, we did this study last year on B2C campaigns, right? And what we found when we looked at the B2B set is there were just way fewer promises, way, way fewer promises. Less than a fifth of campaigns made a promise in the B2B set. Second of all, and very much tied to this lack of promises, there was a lack of big, bold, brand-led ideas. So there was a kind of much more of a, we saw this kind of product-first mindset come through much more in this data set, and a lack of brand-first thinking when it came to executing B2B campaigns. And then very much tied to the absence of brand-led thinking was this focus on short-term performance. So we noticed in the B2B set, a high number of cases were focused on short-term tactics through lead gen and sales-driving activities. They weren't focused on building brand. And as Mimi said before, when you go back to look at things like the MarTech landscape, one of the big problems in B2B in general is that there aren't distinctive brands in the sector. So all of these things go hand in hand with each other, but it was quite startling to see it laid out like this when we actually looked at the full data set.
It was, and we're actually running really good on time, so I'm just going to going to talk about. So we have this idea in B2B that brand is sort of an optional thing. It's like, if you have a bit of extra money, definitely let's go for the brand campaign. And then we also have a view, I think, amongst strategists that brand is really important for the long term, right? It's like a broccoli. If you eat it now, you're going to grow up big and strong. And we've got these two separate ideas. But I think I've been at LinkedIn for coming up for 3 years. Before that, as the director of strategy at the Liberal Democrats. Before that, as the marketing director of Lab Bible. Those are very, very challenger brands in a very, very B2C world where brand is everything. But I've spent 3 years looking at a load of stuff, and I'm absolutely of the belief that in B2B, brand is 1,000 times more important in B2B than it is in B2C. And actually, then I'm doing another piece of research at the moment, which is really about that. Because brand it's like at multiple levels in these long purchase cycles, there's kind of like a tie break thing. There's a tie break where, you know, all other things could be equal, could be one of these vendors. And actually, over what we're seeing in the research is over and over, like 100% reliable that the buyer group land on the bigger brand. The bigger brand you are, the more likely you are to win in the tie break. And yet we see in this data set that brand is something that B2B brands are really uncertain about doing. These lack of bold brand-led ideas says we don't really know if we believe in brand. And the focus on short-term performance says we really believe in the short term. Paul's going to tell you about how the results from last year came, and then we can just come to kind of a bit of a discussion about how last year's B2C campaigns and this year's B2B campaigns actually stack up.
Yeah, so this is results from the study we did last year. So these are results from the B2C study that we did. And what we found is that campaigns that contained a promise were significantly more effective than campaigns that didn't contain a promise. So they were 1.5 more times likely to increase brand health metrics. They were 1.6 times more likely to drive increases in market share. And they're about 20% more likely to also drive an increase in market penetration.
So everybody's got to keep, forget three numbers, two numbers, 1.5 times more likely to increase brand health and 1.6 times more likely to increase market share. So when we looked at the B2B case study, that data set where fewer than one in five campaigns, 18%, made a customer promise. But when we look at the metadata that WARC has, because they read the campaigns and they can see what happened immediately, long-term, short-term, customer promise campaigns in B2B that had a customer promise at the heart of them were 2.5 times more likely to increase serious measures of brand health. I think we, for both groups, excluded awareness, because awareness is something of a slightly squishy metric when you mix it up with those middle of the funnel metrics. You're 2.5 times more likely to increase market share, and you are almost three times more likely to increase market share and 2.5 times more likely to increase brand health. Now, the thing about a customer promise that I really, really, really like is that it is free. It is a creative strategy. It is not about the amount of money you spend. I think almost everything in marketing, I can solve every problem in marketing. Whatever problem you've got in marketing, I can solve it by just saying all you have to do is magic up some more money. If you've got some magic up some more money, if you can outspend all the leaders in the category, in your category, for the foreseeable future, I'm pretty much certain that you will actually get a better result. But this allows you to do it without spending any more money. In fact, you could probably spend less money, and get the same results if you add this to your creative strategy and put it right at the top of your list.
And that's what we found, isn't it? That actually for campaigns with smaller budgets, these effects were larger. So one of the conclusions we came to in the previous paper was that actually a promise can be an even bigger competitive advantage if you're a smaller brand.
It was nearly double.
Yeah, nearly double.
It was in the 80s. It indexed at like, I think, 186. And, you know, I've been a marketer for, as I said, challenger brands. And challenger brands, it's another way of saying you're a CMO who doesn't have as much money as you need to compete in your category. That's really the definition, the brutal definition of being a challenger brand. But you actually can capture the essence of something by making a promise to the customer. So I was a CMO of the Health Lottery. At the Health Lottery, you can win £100,000 a week, right? Compared to Camelot, where you can win £125 million a week. You know, this is not just like a product and a slightly less good product. It's a product and then like a muon microscope to see the other product. But we were able to make the promise that we were half the price and you had statistically more chances to win. Half the price, more chances to win. We went from 1% market share to 1.6% market share. But that's still a 60% growth in our business. If you capture the right promise, it's size agnostic. It's finance agnostic. It's the amount of time you're in market agnostic. A customer promise is an unfair advantage. It's an unfair advantage. And on that basis, we really recommend that you think about using it in your creative.
Do you want to ask me what I think
about that? Dr. Paul, why do you think that customer promise campaigns are so effective in B2B? I mean, even more effective in B2B.
Well, I think there's basically a couple of things. One is, so we've spoken about the fact that a customer promise is a useful reframing of the word brand, right? But I think it's also a good synonym for market orientation as well. It's a good test of how market oriented a particular company is. When they're making a great promise, it's because they've actually taken the time to diagnose a customer's needs, a customer's aspirations, what they want. So one thing that really stood out in some of the promise campaigns we looked at is just impeccable customer research that really led, provided the grounding for a great campaign idea. So I would say that's one thing. The other thing is, I've spoken about promise being this reframing of brand. Well, those two concentric circles of brand and promise, they're overlapping, right? So what we found in the case study set is there's a higher prevalence of brand-led thinking and brand-led ideas when we look at promise campaigns. And I don't think it's a coincidence then that we're seeing within that promise data set that they are better at driving long-term brand health measures, market penetration, market share increases, because it taps into what we know about the power of brand building communication, which is it's kind of the key to driving long-term growth for businesses.
I think you made the point in one of our like a bazillion Zoom calls that if you are not making a customer promise, you are not market oriented. That's a failure of market orientation. Marketers don't go to work every day to fail at the test of market orientation. We go to work every day thinking that we are in the market orientation business. And if you're not making a customer promise, it's hard to make the argument that you are in fact market oriented. And I think that's what Roger was saying.
Yeah, exactly. I think, you know, Roger's quite punchy here and you're just completely wasting your money. But I think he makes a good point that, you know, the more research we're doing into this phenomenon, I think the more we're understanding that it can be this really powerful source of competitive advantage for organizations.
I think he can say that because he's done 40 years in this. I'd be sort of slightly shy to say that. I just want to sum up, right? To sum up for everybody in this room, if you want, and you're in the business of making campaigns work better, especially if you don't have huge amounts of money, especially if you're not in market for a long time, especially if you don't have the best agency in the world and you're not on 15 channels for 2.5 years, you have a hidden advantage by being less Carly Simon, right? Don't make the ad about your brand, make it about your customer. Be more Janet Jackson. Tell them, what have you done for me lately? And absolutely remember that customer promises rock. We looked at a bunch of data. We applied a bunch of tests. We got a bunch of clever people to do regressions and max diffs and other complicated things that Dr. Paul knows about. And we found out that you're 2.5 times more likely to increase meaningful measures of brand health, and you're nearly 3 times more likely to increase market share. That's us. That's our comedy show over. I just wanted to say that I'm very jealous that you're Dr. Paul. My parents are still very unhappy that I am not Dr. Mimi. If we've got any questions, we might have a minute or two to take them. But thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Advertising Week Europe 2024 in audio. Stay connected with us on social media using the handle @advertisingweek and visit our website europe.advertisingweek.com for more exclusive content. This podcast was produced by Podcander, the audio conference solution.